over a large population, over a large area, you can start taking some statistics and saying, yes, if you have so many trees, then people will live longer, the quality of life will be higher, and their health will be much better. And quite honestly, that's one of the things we're aiming for.
Creating Green Cities, the podcast about urban nature-based solutions. We feature stories from people and projects that are greening Europe's cities with their ideas and initiatives. Welcome to the second episode of our podcast created by the Ecologic Institute as part of the Naturevation project. Currently, more than 50% of the global population lives in cities. Well, after all, they're attractive places to live and offer both job opportunities and cultural experiences. At the same time, increasing urbanisation is putting pressure on cities and causing a range of urban sustainability challenges, such as air pollution, congestion, or lack of access to green spaces. Urban nature-based solutions can help address some of these challenges. In the first episode of the Creating Green Cities podcast, we heard from urban innovators in Sweden about the diverse benefits provided by nature-based solutions and their ability to address environmental, social, or economic challenges. Understanding the value of these benefits is important if such solutions are to be considered in decision-making processes as a viable alternative to more traditional business-as-usual grey infrastructure solutions. But how exactly can the impact of nature-based solutions be measured? A number of different approaches exist to assess their contribution to urban sustainability challenges. Depending on how the natural solutions are going to be assessed and for what purpose, impacts can be collected in the form of quantitative, qualitative, or even monetary values. Today's episode will be dedicated to the opportunities and challenges of monitoring and assessing nature-based solutions. To understand those aspects better, we'll hear from two initiatives in Spain and the Netherlands. Let's start with Gabino Caballo from the municipality of Barcelona. Gabino oversees the city's Tree Master Plan, a strategy to increase the size and quality of the city's green cover. As he puts it,
we look after everything that is green, so to speak.
Gabino explains the benefits that trees bring to the city.
The main things and the most obvious thing for trees in the city of Barcelona is definitely shade. They create a huge canopy over the main streets. They basically lower the temperature at street level, making habitable in summer, and also civilize the space that otherwise would be quite harsh. But also they do things like the capture dust, they capture particles, they capture, we believe that they help dissipate the effects of contamination. And they also provide psychologically there are clear benefits to having greenery across the city. And at different levels, whether you're in the street or you are in the third floor in your house, you have this green canopy that is providing a service that unfortunately the urban development of Barcelona is not providing, which is that of having green views, having green landscapes. Also, we are finding lately that it helps in our strategy, fighting climate change. It helps to stabilize the climate in the city. We decided that trees have a presence of their own, have a value of their own, and have a personality of their own. And in fact, the document starts with our neighbors, the trees. So they've become by themselves in a form of separate green infrastructure within the city. And that's why we decided that they deserved a strategy that was devoted to them.
As part of the strategy, the municipality of Barcelona is responsible for managing a huge number of trees in the city. But is the monitoring of so many trees even possible?
Monitoring, for instance, we've been doing for a number of years. We had a dedicated unit to tree assessment. They basically check on the trees in a four-year cycle. We have in the streets, we have somewhere in the region of 200,000 trees that we manage, plus 50,000 trees in parks. So it's almost 250,000 trees that we manage directly in the urban area. We've got way more in the actual local authority. It comes up to 1.4 million trees. We don't manage all of them. But we do check on the trees in the streets heavily for a security reason.
Monitoring the trees in Barcelona and the surrounding region creates a lot of data. In the case of the tree master plan, this data is collected and evaluated as far as possible in order to measure the progress and figure out what's working well or what can be improved upon.
Making a huge effort in data collection. Up until now, we've been collecting data on the green space itself and the number of trees that we have. That kind of data is very useful in the day-to-day management to know what you're doing and what you're not doing. Until recently, we started changing our approach. One of the things we started doing is instead of concentrating on having very many trees, for instance, and that is something that's come about with the change in data, is start measuring the amount of green cover, tree cover that we have in the city. And we've started using systems like NDVI, LIDAR, systems like that to measure green cover in the city. So we are trying to use that data to create different indicators of how we advance and proceed, and also use it as a benchmark or some kind of figure that we can use in measuring infrastructure services, ecosystemic services. But it's something that's under development. But that data at the moment is not, I don't think we can say it's systematically organized. We are collecting it as best as we can. Sometimes when we work, for instance, with universities, and there is scientific support to our work, that data is collected and is actually resulted in a couple of scientific papers that have been recently published on the benefits of trees in the city, for instance. But other areas of work, we do not have this kind of support. We always have to bear in mind that our main function is to actually keep the green space functioning, ticking in good condition and safe condition. So we are biased in that respect, that our collection of data is relatively selective.
Managing such large amounts of data brings many challenges, as Gabino reports. He recommends municipal experts embarking on a similar monitoring exercise to inform themselves about possible tools and methods before deciding on how to collect and manage data in their city.
One of the things we've been doing is collecting data in a proprietary system, which is now reaching its limits. Probably we should have looked at options before we committed to such a closed system. That is one thing. Nowadays, if you start anew, there are a lot more options. Geographical information systems come to mind. We have a proprietary geographical information system, but it's a little bit of a closed loop, and it makes it difficult sharing information and makes it difficult exchanging information. So that's one thing to say before you commit to collecting, gathering data. Be very, very, very sure about what platform you're going to use, the data sets you're going to create, and how you're going to visualize it and share it. Theoretically, we should be moving towards a data-driven decision-making process where data leads your decision-making process. But that is proving quite difficult to organize because there's always a problem at the point of access. When you want to get a very concrete measure of something, you having predefined the data set, you don't get the answers you want and you don't get the information you want. So it looks like there's a lot of prior work to do before you can actually organize information in a cohesive or coherent way to use it later. That seems to be one of the main limitations. Data as such has many forms, and the way you access it seems to have even more forms. And also from a maintenance point of view, from a point of view of people who are working on the territory, it's quite strange because when you look at data for us, it has a value and a meaning. When you are talking about science, it seems to have another, it's another set of information. It's not exactly, they're not interested, scientists are not interested exactly in the same things. And then there is an area in between where you could say lies the applied science, which I think is really useful to us because it helps us to actually make decisions better. So we're a little bit caught between those two extremes, the data we need for our day-to-day work, and then the data that's considered scientifically valid. And tell people trying to initiate this kind of exercise to look very much into this sort of properties of data, the kind of data they're generating, the kind of data they're collecting, who are they collecting it with, and who's going to be accessing, and what kind of questions are going to be asked and answered.
What we can learn from Gabino's story is that many assessment methods require specific expertise when it comes to extracting and analysing the data. In the case of the Barcelona Tree Master Plan, the municipality collects and analyses a lot of data. Ideally, the data collected should meet the different information needs of scientists, practitioners, and policy or decision makers. But what is the aim of all these monitoring and assessment activities in practice? Gabino explains how he would like to use the data and information that the municipality collects in the future.
The benefits from having trees in your street, and we can say now with data in our hands, scientific data, independent research is tangible research. The benefits of the city are clear in terms of health. So we can start quantifying, you know, the amount of money that you spend in green space management, in green space conservation, has a direct effect on the health budget. That's one line we're trying to get onto. Obviously, we haven't got there yet. We cannot say if you plant a tree, you save so many lives. But over a large population, over a large area, you can start taking some statistics and saying, yes, if you have so many trees, then people will live longer, the quality of life will be higher, and the health will be much better. And quite honestly, that's one of the things we're aiming for, to be able to state trees are clearly good for your health, independently of other problems that they may cause, which they do as well. We're not blind to that.
The Barcelona Tree Master Plan is one example of how the assessment of nature-based solutions can be carried out in practice. While the municipality of Barcelona focuses more on the environmental impact of its tree master plan and has collected mostly quantitative data to assess progress, the Food for Good initiative in Utrecht concentrates mainly on the social impact. Hans Pigels, who initiated and coordinates the project, introduces Food for Good in his own words.
Food for Good is a combination of a community garden in a public space, public park in Utrecht, and that's combined with a care farm. So a care farm and community gardening are combined in this public space. And the meaning is that we mix a lot of different people. The people in a garden will be really a reflection of society. So we have elderly people with dementia, unemployed youngsters, people from prison, and also high educated volunteers of students from abroad. And they all work together like one group. And that's really special about Food for Good.
For Hans, the monitoring and assessment of the impact of such initiatives is difficult. He sees some challenges in the evaluation of his measures.
Let me see where to start. Impact measurement is always based on assumptions somewhere. In the process, you make assumptions, and that makes it very hard to determine if the benefit someone has comes from the intervention you did. And we did it with all kinds of surveys with well-being. And then you see that effects are very good. But it's also very doubtful if you have a good representation of all the people who filled in a survey form. If you want to do it really well, I think the best way, and when it's about well-being for people, then measurement should be with observations. But that's unaffordable to do. So it's very difficult to have a very easy way of impact measuring. So we had a lot of discussions about that with the government, but also with ourselves. And then the best way we thought to do it is just to hold surveys with people in the beginning and after half a year or 3 months or even a year, and see how they grow on the well-being scale. We find a lot of good results, but every time when you ask people to fill something in, they are happy to do that. And mostly the people who feel well, they fill in those forms. We never publish the results of the impact measurement because it's not really profound enough. And the only thing I think when you really want to do a good impact measurement, you have to do it by observation. Just see how people develop over time and how they come in and how scared they are or whatever and how they grow and develop over time. We cannot afford that kind of impact measurement.
As we see, measuring social impacts and collecting qualitative data in particular can prove difficult and be expensive. Hans reports that they mainly collected data via surveys conducted among the people involved in the project. But even here, there are small barriers that need to be taken into account. The results were never published, in part because they were not thought to be representative. To convince other people of the impact of his project, Hans prefers to rely on personal stories of individuals involved in Food for Good.
Yeah, just tell the stories and show people and let them feel what happens in the garden. And what I found out when I want to tell the story about Food for Good, when I want to explain them what happens, what the benefits are, then I tell them stories which people told me, sometimes a few sentences or a video or some pictures. And the best way to do is that by bringing people to the garden. And then that happens sometimes when people come in, they want to hire the place for some kind of meeting, and they come in like in suits or very serious. And then they go out happy and surprised and connected. So that's the effect of the garden. And it's difficult to measure in numbers. I'm not sure. Sometimes we even found out that a lot of people use this impact measurement to make some kind of business case, but then especially to persuade people with money to invest in their organization. So because it's so easy to manipulate the assumptions you made, it's a big challenge, impact measurement. That's my conclusion.
These two examples from Barcelona and Utrecht show that there are many aspects which need to be considered when assessing nature-based solutions. The monitoring and evaluation is important. Without question, its results form an important basis for decision-making. However, there are many challenges and practical considerations around the question of whether and how an evaluation should be carried out. These vary according to the needs and aims of a particular project. Different approaches are required to assess social, environmental, and economic impacts, and these need different, often complex and elaborate, financial, time, and resource investments. These investments are, however, incredibly valuable when it comes to learning about how to effectively design and implement a nature-based solution to achieve the desired impacts and to scale up such solutions to be implemented more widely. This podcast is created as part of Naturevation, an EU-funded Horizon 2020 research project focusing on urban, nature-based innovation. If you're interested in learning more about the assessment of nature-based solutions, you can find more information and relevant resources under the Assessment section of the Naturevation project website. Furthermore, the Urban Nature online course contains an entire module dedicated to this topic. You can find the corresponding links in the show notes. But besides the monitoring and assessment of nature-based solutions, what else plays an important role in their successful implementation? In the next episode, we'll focus on governance aspects. In other words, how can policy, management, and governance strategies influence the implementation of nature-based solutions? Listen to the next episode to learn more about the world of urban nature. Take care, and until next time.